You're listening to Thinking Outside the Bud, where we speak with entrepreneurs, investors, thought leaders, researchers, advocates, and policymakers who are finding new and exciting ways for cannabis to positively impact business, society, and culture. And now, here is your host, business coach, Bruce Eckfeldt.
Welcome, everyone. This is Thinking Outside the Bud. I'm Bruce Eckfeldt. I'm your host. Our guest today is Brian Bergman. He is owner at the law offices of Brian Bergman. And we're going to talk about cannabis. We're going to talk about consumption lounges. Brian's been working with a couple different organizations, a couple different groups in the California scene that are really kind of sorting through how this consumption lounge licensing is going to work, how the events are going to work. We're still kind of early stages here, but really fascinating area of cannabis, I think. It's going to be one of the bigger kind of growth areas for the cannabis space. It's also, I think, really going to change the landscape of cannabis use, cannabis businesses, as we kind of get into this, being able to actually consume in public and actually really kind of bring it into social settings. So excited to hear what Ryan has been focusing on and what he's been learning and the groups that he's been working with and kind of where we are with this whole kind of area of cannabis. So with that, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Yes, pleasure.
I really loved that comment you just made about what it's going to mean for public consumption. And, you know, it's funny because as I stop and think back to just the history of legalization over the last 20 years or so in the country, I don't think anybody really voted yes because they wanted to allow businesses to grow and sell cannabis. I mean, it was always about the lifestyle. It was always about being able to, you know, have that community out in public and being able to embrace what people are already doing anyway. And what fascinates me so much about the topic of today is it's really moving back to that. It's giving cannabis businesses and brands an opportunity to stabilize. In my opinion, the biggest growth opportunity in the industry is public consumption, and it also really allows the industry to work with other non-plant touching businesses and industries as well.
Yeah.
And when you kind of combine all that together, I don't want to just say it's the future, but it's really important.
Yeah. So I guess maybe take us back a little bit. I mean, how, when the laws were originally set up, how did they sort of contemplate or not contemplate kind of the consumption lounge or the social consumption aspect of this, and how have things kind of evolved to where we are now? Like, how has this played out over the last, you know, 5-10 years?
Well, sure, it's been patchwork, just like everything else. I mean, when you don't have federal legalization, that's just kind of what happens, is each state kind of gets to it in their own way, shape, or form. We've had a couple states like Nevada and Michigan that have been pretty forward thinking about it recently and have been really trying to embrace consumption. You're seeing a lot of that with the strip and consumption lounges. In fact, Nevada has an interesting separate license with respect to lounges where they're allowing either retail dispensaries that actually have a license to sell the products, having an ability to also have a consumption license. And then they're having other non-dispensary type businesses that are still able to get consumption licenses. They have a lot more restrictions on them, but it's kind of an interesting way so that, like, you know, conceivably you could go to a barbershop and if it had a consumption license, consume while you're getting your cut.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's that. And I mean, then you have Michigan and California. They're doing event license in addition to consumption. And there's others as well, like New Jersey's going to have something online soon. New York has it on. California and Colorado also have differing licenses. Even Alaska has some. So there are states that are doing it, but they're in varying forms of implementation at this stage. And obviously, being from California, I know a lot more about California than the others, but I've been paying attention as a whole. And what it really comes down to when you just step back from it is it kind of comes down to one of two things. One is either a permanent facility, which is what we're calling a lounge. And it's like a bar, but it's for cannabis consumption. And these lounges tend to be, you know, pretty open-aired and beautiful, or, you know, a lot of air control systems and things of that. Not nearly as dirty and quiet as a lot of bars are.
Yeah.
Quiet is the wrong word, excuse me, but like, but definitely a different vibe altogether. But there's the lounges, and then some states are allowing for some form of an event license. And in California, they did want that since 2018. When the Mao CURSA passed, there was already a contemplation for allowing both lounge retail licenses and temporary event licenses. And they're two different things. And essentially what it comes down to with the lounge, like I said, is it's a permanent location. It's a physical place where people can go in. It doesn't move and change. And there's rules and regulations to that. And then the event license is, and they have this in Michigan as well, is basically, okay, if a local jurisdiction's cool with it, then especially in California, because the state doesn't really regulate, it's all about the local county or city or just other jurisdiction that makes the decisions on this. But that does is it says, okay, for a few days or for a day, we're going to let you create a separate premises where you can consume and sell products within that premises. So the easiest way to picture that would be like a beer garden at a festival. You know, if you go to a public festival, some sort like a music festival or a county fair or something like that, and usually there are locations where there's a little bit of a roped off area and there's a bar back there and people can go in and buy their drinks and have to stay in the quote unquote beer garden.
Yep.
I also saw those recently over the holidays at a Holiday Lights installation. They had a beer garden at the front and in the middle so that people could, as they're walking through the light installations, stop and have a drink.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of the same thing. That's one way of thinking about it. It would be kind of the same thing where, like, you know, there's something called Grasslands at this famous festival called festival called Outside Lands in San Francisco, for instance. That Grasslands is its own separate little premises within the Outside Lands Festival where consumption is allowed. That's a very famous one in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park. They're doing some more permanent lounge setups and like some of the outside in the parking lots of some of the arenas in like the Oakland and Adelanto cities. But the event license is especially interesting because it's very flexible. It doesn't have to be a county fair or music festival if the local jurisdiction's cool with it. It could be maybe even a temporary event license where maybe you have an immersive experience like the Van Gogh pop-up immersive museum that was like moving all around the country last year or so. Technically, if the local jurisdictions would have allowed it, you could have applied for and gotten a permit to create a consumption area outside in the parking lot or something roped off from the immersive experience wherever they were able to do it based upon the rules and regulations of that jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And people could go and consume in the consumption lounge and then go check out the event, which would obviously elevate the experience. So it's kind of a powerful like catch-all that depending on how each local jurisdiction chooses to treat and allow it, could allow for a little more flexibility to allow retailers to sell their products at places other than just their stores. And so those are the two types of consumption that's really out there in one form or another.
Yeah. I'm curious right now, like if an establishment, how do I ask this? If they allow consumption, like what are the risks? Like what are they, I mean, I can, you know, obviously I imagine there's the cannabis thing, but you know, if you're smoking flower, I mean, you're running into smoking laws and stuff. Like, I guess what starts to come into play as establishments allow for this kind of activity?
Well, there are different rules and regulations with respect to liability. I mean, Vegas and Nevada kind of treats it more like dram shop style laws where, you know, there's certain rules and regulations to make sure that you cut people off that are visibly intoxicated. Uh-huh. But there's limitations on the amount of liability and how far down the food chain you can go. Supply chain, you can go to sue for liability. Similarly, though, other states like Michigan allow you all the way back to the source potentially. And so it just depends on which state you're in and how those laws are done. But the issues that come up are, is there public intoxication? Is there concerns about driving under the influence and over-serving? I mean, those are always going to be the same. And they're being attacked differently, and it's still a code that has not been fully cracked. I mean, some jurisdictions are requiring set time limits. But what do you do with people after they've been sitting there if they, you know, potentially smoke? Once they smoke, they're higher. It's not like you're drinking where you're going to keep ordering more drinks necessarily. It's like you're high, you're good. Or you take an edible or something else, you're going to wait, or a drink, you're going to wait till it kicks in. You're not necessarily going to keep on going. So not only does it affect the business models, it's also a question of, well, what do we do with them, especially if there's laws like in places like California right now where you're only allowed to sell the consumption products and that's it. They may allow you to bring outside food delivered in right now, but you're not allowed to serve or prepare food on the premises. In fact, there was a law that was going to fix that was on the books that got passed through assembly in California to allow for like selling comedy shows, music, entertainment, and like non-alcoholic food and beverages. And it got vetoed by Governor Newsom because the stated reason being that he was concerned that because it was a smoking facility, that food preparation where smoking was allowed was not properly addressed. And so that's still being worked through as well. So there are health code and safety reasons that are still being worked through. There are insurance reasons that are still being worked through. And there are public safety. I just did an event recently here in January with the LA County Bar Association. And, you know, I was talking with the deputy director of the State Department of Cannabis Control, the head of the Los Angeles Department of Cannabis Regulation, and the assistant city manager of West Hollywood, which is a city that is really very much embraced lounges. And we also had a great consultant by the name of Jackie Subek that was also with us. And she does a lot of on-the-ground consumption consulting work. And it was interesting to hear from the city of West Hollywood that they're not really seeing an uptick in crime. They're actually seeing the opposite. They're finding it to be a public safety benefit, knowing that there is a safe place for consumption that's being properly worked and regulated on. And they're very bullish on the idea of allowing consumption lounges in their jurisdiction. And it was very heartening to hear that conversation and having that discussion. And because there's a lot of stigma out there and misinformation. And one thing that I've been seeing over and over is that when you know where it's happening, A, you're creating a safe place instead of having people doing it in their cars or in back alleys or other places where it can be a nuisance. And it's being done in a way where it can be monitored. So not only that, it also creates job opportunities and other resource opportunities for the jurisdictions, including taxes and things like that. So it's a positive to embrace it instead of stick your head in the sand about it, but it's something that is still really being worked out. And we're still in the early stages nationwide and in each state about how that's going to look.
Yeah. So what are the issues? Like in these discussions, like what are the kind of the pro like feelings or the things that people are kind of using, arguments people are using to kind of allow or to expand this? And then what are the concerns or things that are holding it back? Like give us a little sense of the two sides of the coin here.
Absolutely. So the negative side first, because it's almost easier, is it's just misinformation, but it's just the general stigma that's out there. This is a drug. We don't want people doing drugs. We don't want to allow it. It's going to lead to organized crime. It's going to stink. It's going to ruin our cities if we allow these public places. And a lot of the time it's lack of information more than anything else, because the reality is that most of these facilities, because of the regulations, A, have to have very tight security, and B, have to have odor regulations and controls where they're basically using some of the same filtration systems that airplanes or casinos are using. And why is this any different from alcohol? Especially when you stop and you think about it for a second, that's those who consume cannabis versus those that consume alcohol. Those that consume alcohol, they tend to get louder or boisterous, and they tend to, you know, want to not have so much social cue awareness around them and more clear inhibitions. Cannabis users, you don't see that so much. They tend to get more introverted. They want to more focus inward most of the time. They don't seem to want to bother people as much, and they want to be much more stimulated by their senses than by the outside world. And so you've got to wonder how much of a thing it really is from a public safety. But when you talk about public safety, which continues to be another one, for most of the police officers, sheriffs, and city officials that I've talked to that have embraced it in their jurisdictions, they found that they're actually surprisingly pleased that there isn't more organized crime and that they now know where it's happening, and they can actually coordinate and work with the local businesses to make sure that proper protections are in place and that they know what to do if something happens.
Yeah.
The jurisdictions that I've talked to of police officers and similar that aren't allowing it, it's either the stigma answer, oh, we just don't do that. Yeah. And we don't allow that. Or it's interesting to hear some of the misinformed statements that are made. It's not a one for one. There could be some legitimate reasons, but overall, from what I've seen and heard, it's not much different from the same concerns that alcohol has. And in many ways, the actual usage is less invasive, and those that use it are less of an issue.
Yeah. Seems less problematic. Yeah. From a social kind of point of view, like the complexities that come from, you know, people getting intoxicated on alcohol versus cannabis, I would imagine that alcohol probably has more potential downside and risk.
Totally. And then the other thing about it is this interesting is that people have been doing it for years and years and years anyways. I mean, if people want to go and consume before they go watch a movie or go to a concert or a comedy show or work out and do yoga or whatever it may be, they're going to do it regardless, and they always have.
Yeah.
But they're being forced to do it in alleyways. They're being forced to do it in their cars. They're being forced to do it in places where there is no regulation. How is that better for public safety?
Yeah. Bruce Eckfeldt here. Are you a founder or CEO looking to grow and scale your business? Are you feeling stuck and struggling to get to the next level? Maybe your leadership team is just not aligned and lacking accountability. I can help. I work with companies to craft highly effective and scalable growth strategies and create high-performance leadership teams to execute on them. Using my unique combination of frameworks and tools from Scaling Up, Metronomics, 3HAG, Lean and Agile, and my own experience as a founder and CEO of an Inc. 500 company, I help teams accelerate their growth, increase profitability, and dramatically reduce risk and drama as we go. If you'd like to learn more about how I can help, check out my website at eckfeldt.com or email me at bruce@eckfeldt.com. That's eckfeldt.com. Now on to the episode. Well, and the other one, it kind of struck me when the first time someone kind of explained this or mentioned it, it was like from a travel point of view and a tourism point of view, a tourist coming into, you know, a cannabis friendly jurisdiction and, you know, buying product. I mean, there's nowhere to consume because most of the hotels won't let you consume in the hotel. There's no consumption in public, right? Mm-hmm. And now, like, there's literally nowhere to consume. So if you're, unless you're back in your home or back in someone's home, private property, like, there's really no reasonable, legitimate option.
Basically, yes. Although it's interesting because if it's not being sold, at least here on the West Coast, there is a questionable, I don't know if I can call it a loophole per se, but if it's a private facility, even if it is a business that's open to the public and they're allowing a private event or something to occur and they're choosing to allow consumption, they may be in violation of their lease.
Yeah.
But beyond that, that's not necessarily illegal. There's a real private versus public distinction, but that line is not entirely clear.
Yeah.
But you're hitting on a major thing about tourism, and you know, you look at the wine industry and how important tourism is to the wine industry, and it would be the same for cannabis.
Yeah.
But there's another thing too. I mean, being a Los Angeles resident, I'm watching that we're about to get the Olympics and the World Cup here in the next couple years. And we're going to be having people in from all over the world where cannabis consumption is legal. There will be places for them to buy it. But where are they going to go, all these tourists? How is this going to be done? And currently, I don't believe there's a lot of political will or motivation to create permanent lounges in the city of Los Angeles. But there was a discussion that maybe in the near future, temporary licenses are going to be able to be starting to be used for that very reason, so that during these events, there's going to be at least be a legal mechanism for some places for these quote-unquote cannabis gardens or other temporary facilities to open up. How that works is still something that LA City really needs to work out and consider. And it is, even though the Olympics and the World Cup are 2 to 4 years away, it's pressing. Now is the time to be dealing with this. And I think that that's going to be a major discussion for the industry here in 24. Yeah. And in general, it's, yes, hotel that chooses to allow consumption, are they violating their liquor license?
Yeah, it depends
on how they're doing it.
Yeah.
It depends on where they're doing it. Is it a separate area? Are they selling or are they just allowing consumption? Because then it's a private property. So we are seeing places that are these quote unquote bed and breakfasts popping up. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing some facilities that are like, well, we'll let you try our stuff, but you can't buy it unless you order it from a delivery who then online delivery who then brings it to you at the location, which just so happens to be a hub right next door. There are things that people are doing, but it's not entirely clear where those lines are truly legal or not, and that's what needs to be worked out. So really, when you look at consumption, there's like three main areas. There's what are the regs truly allowing and what aren't, and what type of licenses is really necessary, and then there's actual implementation of the business models that's actually going to create it to be a viable business, because like I mentioned before, it's not like alcohol where you can just try to sell volume within a certain amount of time. And then it's lastly public education and awareness, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And these three areas are still being discussed and worked through quite a bit at this stage.
Yeah. You mentioned the liquor licenses. I mean, how's the liquor industry responding to this? I mean, do they see this as a direct threat? Are they seeing this as a collaboration opportunity? Like, where have you noticed, you know, kind of the response to potentially changing the landscape on this kind of social consumption area?
I think it depends on who you're talking to and the interests of that party. And what I mean by that is there could be a lot of different things. For instance, up in wine country in the central regions of California, the wine industry has had some real issues with the outdoor cultivation farms, because that when the wind picks up the pollens and the terpenes from the flowers, they then get taken over onto their grapes and it messes with their profiles. And they don't like that. And they don't like fighting over water. Right. So in that sense, there's been some real conflict between the industries. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of it, there's a lot of distributors out there who just see that these drinks that are becoming more of a really popular product line now, mm-hmm. and other things, and they're seeing it as an obvious way to walk in and create a new opportunity in business. In fact, some liquor industries like Lagunitas and Pabst have already jumped in. Yeah. And so then there's others out there that are kind of like, well, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. But then others are like, well, this is direct competition against my sin business, so if you will, mm-hmm. and I don't want that. So it's really across the board, interestingly. It depends on the motivations and what's driving them in their opinion in that moment. But I've interestingly seen a real spread on that.
Yeah. I could see different kind of strategies in different cases. And I think it somewhat depends on the location and what they're feeling as being kind of the, is it going to consume or cannibalize their existing business, or is this going right. to grow kind of the pie shape here? Or the
right. And at the end, they're all motivated for the bottom line. So
yeah. I think understandably, yeah. I guess from a licensing point of view, how have you seen different states kind of approach this? I mean, it feels like on one hand, you know, it's cannabis, right? So it should be kind of an extension of the existing licenses. On the other hand, this is a very different kind of business, right? Like running an establishment and a lounge, and, you know, it's very different than cultivation and processing and dispensing. Totally. Like, how are you seeing kind of the licensing strategy and what seems to be working and not working?
Well, that's part of the problem. I mean, you look at California, it's not a clear answer. And each state, again, patchwork, doing it differently. California, yeah. for instance, I'll talk about first because I'm most familiar. They built it into the existing Type 10 retail license for lounges.
Okay.
And then a temporary event license is its own separate license type, but an event license holder without a retail license can't actually sell cannabis itself. Event license holder is responsible for putting everything together, getting the diagrams, bringing all the differing retailers into their facilities and handling the distribution and security logistics, but they're not actually selling themselves.
Yeah.
So basically right now, that's the two ways that California is dealing with it. Other jurisdictions like Colorado, it's just kind of like, well, what are you applying for? We can add it on. Same with Alaska. And then, you know, you have an actual separate event license in Michigan. You have Nevada, for instance, like I mentioned earlier, they have this separate consumption only license that they use where you don't even need to be a dispensary, but you're limited on what you can sell, and you can't really, it's like single use sales are only allowed. Like you can't buy and take product out of consumption only facility in Nevada. You got to go to a retail facility for that. But for instance, in California, since you have to have a retail license anyways, technically you could, even though the consumption area needs to be separately diagrammed and helped and dealt with for regulations and such, yeah. they can still sell the product and leave with that product. So every state's been doing it really differently. I know New Jersey and New York are talking about their pilot programs and starting to work things along on theirs as well, for instance, on the East Coast, but further behind in their industry in terms of getting everything up the ground. And so they're still figuring it out. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. One thing I'm learning from the East Coast is they're not watching the West Coast that carefully to what happens and what works and doesn't work. I'm seeing some of the same, wait, why are you doing this also over there? And when I'm looking at like certain states' implementations of their regs, and it's like, don't you realize that this has already caused this many problems in California? Why are you doing the same thing? Because they might just be blindly copying it in some respects. So, I mean, that's another thing I see all the time locally here with the local governments is LA being one of the biggest cities. Early on when we were just getting into licensing, a lot of local jurisdictions were kind of waiting to see what the big boys and girls like LA or San Francisco were doing and then seeing how it was working before they even started to decide to regulate or not regulate cannabis.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. And who do you see sort of getting involved? Like on one hand, I can see the kind of the existing cannabis license holders just like, hey, this is a natural extension. We should go into this too. But then also, I mean, you have all these existing establishments, you know, people that are highly experienced in putting together these kind of spaces and
thank you
design it. Like they obviously are interested in this too. which side or who is actually pursuing these licenses?
It's a combination, and it's a real interesting combination. I think a lot of people feel that they need to be cannabis operators to do so, but the reality is that they're trying to recreate a wheel that's already been invented, like you just mentioned, and that's why I said thank you, is because this is not hospitality and public and entertainment businesses. This is not some new industry. This is something that has been around for
We've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, and post-COVID, where you know, our society is much more on an experiential than goods tip right now. Like we got a lot of like, you know, stimulus packages to go and buy things so that we sat at home and used it. But now we're like, I'm sick of being at home. I want to go out and do. There's a lot of appetite for this. But first off, a lot of the non-plant touching industries that serve these, they either don't understand it or haven't really gotten enough education about it up to how they can fit in. And then there's also this fear of like, wait, this is subject to all these special rules and regulations, and therefore I'm not sure I want to do it or not, especially when you start talking about funding. As an attorney in the space, I actually feel that entertainment gives a lot more opportunities because you don't necessarily have to have consumption business be the only part of the enterprise, and it doesn't necessarily need to be the forward facing. It could be an anchor business, but where it's a part of a greater development that is geared towards entertainment for consumers afterwards.
Yeah.
And in doing something like that, what you're actually doing is you're creating a whole ecosystem of opportunities where it doesn't have to be financed and funded by anchor business per se. It could be funded and financed through the other non-plant touching areas, and then loans can be given or other structures could be done. And it's really interesting that to see how and where people are going to determine that. I've seen some really interesting ideas in West Hollywood coming recently. I've heard some other great ideas from other places. I've seen things like, hey, we're going to allow you to do some poker playing or something while you wait. Or, hey, we're going to have the lounge is going to be here, but downstairs there's going to be a restaurant. We're also going to have a music venue here. And this is going to be a bunch of other stuff. Or maybe we've got like a facility for painting and yoga right nearby so that there's other things to be done. And these businesses don't necessarily have, they could be separate or they could have some common ownership, but be separate businesses. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat or dog or whatever. And excuse me if that's offensive, but there's a lot of ways to make this work. And it's sort of fun too, because nobody knows how it's going to play out. So you could be a real trailblazer here.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like this is going to be like competing with bars, and this is going to be another kind of core social spots, and you know, every town's going to have their local bar, everyone town's going to have their local consumption lounge?
I do think that, yes, as time goes on, there will be the alternatives to bars, which are consumption lounges, and it's already started. And I do think that much like there's opportunities for consumption of alcohol to occur at other places on temporary basis, that that's still going to happen with cannabis too. It's just taking a long time and, you know, some education and misinformation that needs to be worked through. I mean, it just really resonated for me at that panel that we just did the other week, where the assistant city manager of West Hollywood just kept saying over and over, this is just like alcohol. We need to regulate it and treat it just like alcohol.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that, and they've had not a lot of issues. They just had, West Hollywood has a very massive Halloween scene. It's always been a really big event. And they allowed for some temporary cannabis consumption sites this last year in 23. And the city manager reported during the panel that it pretty much went off without a hitch. It was lovely. Everybody loved it. Gay pride parades is another big one that they do it for as well. And it has not really been an issue for them. I mean, probably even less so than when you have a bunch of people drinking and getting rowdy. So it's, yes, in answer to your question, I do believe that more and more we're going to be seeing that, and it's an alternative because everybody has their different alternatives. Another thing that I find interesting is some people find that they focus more or become more creative or work better, or at least they think they do after they consume cannabis versus alcohol.
More creative to myself.
With alcohol, that's not necessarily the case. And so, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, people go and maybe don't want to have a drink at a business meeting or, you know, while they're working during the day, but they may love to go to like a quote unquote coffee style shop, where maybe they can have a puffer or a low dosage drink just to kind of put the fur down or something. And that's definitely something that I've seen and talked to a lot of people that are doing already. So I do think that that's going to continue to develop over time. It's just, we're still kind of early, but it's there.
I remember people talking about like the three martini lunch, right? And it's going to be like the three blunt lunch now.
That would be interesting to see how together in business was really done at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
On either of those.
Yeah.
Neither of those situations. Three blunt lunch. Wow, that's a lot. But so three martinis. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Brian, this has been a pleasure. If people want to find out more about you, more about the work that you're doing and consumption, what's the best way to get that information?
Sure. And any other type of business attorney needs that you might have.
Yeah.
I'm based out of Los Angeles, but I do a lot of work with a lot of different types of industries. And I'm going to have a webpage shortly. I just went solo. It's very exciting recently. But I will have a webpage at BMB, which are my initials, Brian Michael Bergman. So BMBlegal.com. That should be up in the next few weeks. But you can always reach me at Bergman@BMBlegal.com or find me on LinkedIn.
Great. I'll make sure that everything is in the show notes so people can get that. Brian, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Bruce. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on here.
That's it for this episode of Thinking Outside the Bud. Be sure to subscribe using your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our future episodes. See you next time.
You've been listening to Thinking Outside the Bud with business coach Bruce Eckfeldt. To find a full list of podcast episodes, download the tools and worksheets, and access other great content, visit the website at thinkingoutsidethebud.com. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at thinkingoutsidethebud.com/newsletter.